From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the ninth day of July 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Look at the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. And talk about the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, we'll hear all about what farmers in Illinois and other parts of the planet have been dealing with this year. It's glyphosate herbicide resistance, and there's more than one weed. We'll talk with Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago for a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. The July soft red winter wheat up 15.5 cents today. The settlement price there at $6.75.5. September at $6.77.5, up 14.5. And looking forward to next year at $7.06¾, up 14.25 for the harvest month of 2014. That, of course, the July contract. Harvest month for the hard red in the near term at $7.06¾ for July, up 15.5 in Kansas City. From the corn pit in Chicago, July futures $7.04, up 12.25. September at $5.51¾, up 18.5. And December contract at $5.21¾, up 21.25 cents. March corn at $5.33½, up 21.25. And the May contract at $5.41, up 21.25. July $5.47½, up 20.75. Bean meal at $5.20.80, up 9.70. Bean oil today at $47.08 is 7 cents higher. July soybeans at $16.13¼, up 4 cents. August at $14.68¼, 12¾ higher. In September at $13.22½, up 22¼. November beans at $12.76¼, up 24 cents. In January futures $12.81½, up 24. March corn, or rather soybeans, at $12.81, up 22¼ on the day. The live cattle futures finished up the August at $122.72½, 65 cents higher. August feeders at $151.15, down 45 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Lean hogs in Chicago finished the July at $100.85. They were 27.5 cents lower. The outside markets show crude oil now trading at $103.78 a barrel, 84 cents higher. RBOB gasoline at $2.93¼. That's up 4 and 8 tenths. And ethanol at $2.42¼. Is a penny and 6 cents higher on the afternoon. The spread between the two at 50 and 6/10 cents is 3 2/10 cents wider than it was yesterday, and natural gas today is 8 cents lower at $3.66¼. Diesel fuel trading $2.98½, a 0.4 cents higher on the day, and the gold futures at $1,245.90. That's up $11 even. The U.S. dollar at 84.57. is up 0.39 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll see a 30% chance of rainfall today. Partly sunny with a high near 89 degrees, a southwest wind at 9 miles an hour tonight. Showers and thunderstorms, those will be mainly after 2 a.m. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain, mostly cloudy and a low of 74, a southwest wind at 7 to 9. Chance of rainfall this evening set at 70% in the area. Tomorrow, that continues at the 70% chance. Some of the storms tomorrow will produce heavy rain again, mostly cloudy and 87 degrees. On a southwest wind at 7 to 13. Wednesday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Those will come before 8 in the evening, partly cloudy and a low of 63. The winds will turn then and come from the north at 7 to 10 miles an hour. That's why it will cool down. And on Thursday during the day, we'll benefit from that with a high of just 82 degrees under sunny skies. Beautiful day on Thursday. Thursday evening, clear and 58. Friday, sunny and 81. Friday night, mostly clear and 62. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the futures markets. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, is here for the ninth day of July. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it looks like the risk premium is back in the market, and I suppose it's all based on warmer weather.
You know, that's the main instigator of it. That's what happened on the early morning weather, Monday morning. That was the start of all this, and we're seeing a little bit of technical buying that was caused by yesterday's little pop-up a little bit that way. And then we've got a report on Thursday, the WASD report out with some number changes we look for. And then, of course, Friday is the big expiration day of the July contracts. And, of course, we're seeing a lot of conflict about how to handle what cash is trading at and what the futures are going to go off the board at. And so that's a little inspiration in the marketplace, too.
Well, let's turn our attention a little further forward to the new crop as opposed to the old crop of the moment. And usually this would be a week, as we head into the WASD report, any report for that matter, that many people might stand aside. On the other hand, I don't know that you might be thinking that this would offer an opportunity to make another increment of sales or maybe somewhere above this level.
Well, I think that that's, of course, the thought out here right now. You know, as we look at the crop ratings, we've looked at some awfully good crop ratings compared to last year. Of course, last year was a disaster, but, you know, we do have basically a better rated crop this year. And as we look around our area here in Indiana, the crops look extremely well. And, you know, we should find some resistance in the, you know, like the 530 range here on the December corn and probably again at the $13 mark here on the November beans after we closed above that 72 mark here today. So I would think there'd be some people that'd be more than willing to at least be looking at puts here if we got another day up tomorrow.
What are your expectations for the WASD numbers on Thursday?
Well, I think, you know, everybody's looking for a little bit of a cutback in the corn carryover. We're continuing to see very good ethanol usage, continuing to see some feed usage. The bean carryover, you know, it was at 125. The average guess is 121. Not much difference, but we are continuing to see, tremendous crush here. And the way the bean meal is going now, crushers are going to continue to want to buy beans, so they figure that number will come down. And also the wheat carryover looking to come down a little bit on this harvest delays because of the rains in Indiana, Illinois, and other parts around here that aren't being able to get their wheat harvested.
The trade has been of the opinion that the consumption numbers for the 2013-14 or next crop year have been a little strong, a bit rich. Will they change them?
I don't think they will. I think they're looking here and seeing that we did see some business develop here over the last bit. We saw China stepping in aggressively buying some wheat. They bought some corn in the meantime. We're continuing to see feeder cattle go at some pretty hefty rates, going to maybe fill in some feedlots that haven't been used for a while, thinking the later corn may be out in Iowa and that might be silage instead of full corn, and they're going to take advantage of that.
Is there any reason, I suppose, for livestock producers to think about locking anything in at this time, or do you just wait it out?
I think that depending on how big you are and what you're looking at, and you've already got some stuff locked in, I think there were some people that did lock in some stuff yesterday and maybe today, and I'd have to wait until after this Friday here before I lock in more stuff if I'm a feed user.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the
day? That's about it. And, just have a good day.
Hey, you too. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 6% of the corn crop is now silking across the United States, at least in the 18 primary corn-growing states. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 20%. Nationwide, 51% of the crop is said to be in good condition, excellent condition at 17% for a total of 68. That's up one percentage point in those two categories for corn over last week. Soybean condition is 55% good, 12% excellent, and that's 67% total is the same as last week. As of Sunday, 10% of the soybean crop was blooming. That compares to 24% on the national five-year rolling average. 95% of the crop, of course, is emerged. That compares to 97% on the rolling five-year average. Let's take a look now at what's been happening in the five primary corn-growing states with their statisticians.
This is Greg Tayson, state statistician for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending July 7, 2013. Iowa recorded its driest week since early April, with most locations receiving no measurable rainfall. This provided 6.2 days suitable for field work statewide during the week and gave farmers the perfect opportunity to bale hay and finish side dressing their corn fields. Statewide, the average precipitation was just 4 hundredths of an inch, about 1 inch below normal. The area north of Grinnell received the most rainfall with just over 1.5 inches. Temperatures for the first part of the week were unseasonably mild, but by later in the week, temperatures had warmed to seasonal norms. The drier conditions led to a decrease in soil moisture levels, although 88% of the topsoil and 96% of the subsoil were reported in adequate to surplus categories. With reports of corn beginning to tassel in scattered fields across the state, 58% of the crop is rated in good to excellent condition, up slightly from last week. Meanwhile, the soybean crop is rated 56% good to excellent, although 5% of the crop has yet to emerge. This is Greg Tayson reporting for the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois, with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. 8% of corn acres are now silking, compared to 73% 1 year ago and 32% for the five-year average. The average height of corn plants is now 48 inches, compared to 67 inches last year and 55 inches normally. Soybeans are now 9% blooming, compared to 40% last year and 20% normally. Wheat harvest has reached 68% complete, compared to 99% 1 year ago and 79% normally. Crop conditions changed very little from last week. 8% of corn acres are in very poor to poor condition, 24% of acres are fair, and 68% of acres are in good to excellent condition. 7% of soybean acres are in very poor to poor condition, 20% are in fair condition, and 73% are in good to excellent condition. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Scott Keller with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Nebraska Crop Progress Report. Clear skies and ample sunshine boosted row crop development, and it allowed wheat harvest in southern counties to progress uninterrupted. Much of the state saw little or no precipitation last week, with topsoil moisture supplies declining as hot temperatures returned late in the week. As a result, spring-planted dryland crops in much of the western two-thirds of the state were showing signs of stress. Statewide, irrigated corn conditions rated 83% good or excellent. This compared to 77% average. Dryland corn conditions rated 66% good or excellent compared to 71% average. Soybean conditions rated mostly good, with 20% of the crop blooming. Wheat was 12% harvested, well behind last year, and the second cutting of alfalfa was 19% harvested. This is Scott Keller with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, the Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report. Dry weather diminished both topsoil and subsoil moisture supplies, where both reached 7% surplus. That's a reduction from last week's 25% surplus for topsoil and 21% surplus for subsoil. The average corn stalk height was 30 inches tall. That's behind 62 inches tall rated last year for this week and the five-year average of 46 inches tall. Corn condition increased to 63% good or excellent. 96% of soybeans have emerged. 5% of soybeans are blooming, which is 16 percentage points behind the normal pace. The average soybean plant height was 8 inches tall, which is 4 inches shorter than normal. Soybean conditions also improved to 63% good or excellent. 89% of spring wheat had to reach the jointing or beyond stage, with 65% headed or beyond. Spring wheat condition improved to 67% good or excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Hello, this is Andy Higgins with the Indiana Field Office of USDA NAS, and this is the Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending July 7th.
Moderate temperatures and ample soil moisture allowed the corn crop to make rapid growth, with a few scattered fields beginning to tassel. Corn condition improved slightly and is rated 81% good to excellent, compared with only 12% last year at this time. 9% of the soybean acreage is blooming, compared with 42% last year and 20% for the five-year average. And soybean condition is rated 75% good to excellent, compared with 14% last year at this time. Rain showers across most of the state kept wheat harvest to a minimum during the week, with only 32% of the wheat acreage harvested, compared with 98% last year and 69% for the five-year average. Producers are worried that excessive moisture will soon begin to take its toll on the winter wheat crop if they are not able to finish harvest soon. Farmers are hoping for drier conditions to not only finish wheat harvest, but to also bale straw and plant double crop soybeans. Winter wheat condition is rated 76% good to excellent at this time. This is Andy Higgins reporting.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly crop progress reports. You know, you reap what you sow. Farmers in the state of Illinois, many parts of the planet for that matter, have been using glyphosate herbicide over and over and over again for more than a decade, and the weeds have finally become resistant, and it's a problem this year. The last week of June and the first week of July, Aaron Hager's email inbox and voicemail were filled with nervous pleas for help.
Most of the questions that we've had the last 10 days to 2 weeks have focused on either mare's tail or water hemp, and almost exclusively, how do we manage these large plants in soybean?
There is a short answer for both weeds. If they're over 12 inches tall, and that's pretty likely this late in the season, then there is no way to control them with any herbicide or herbicide tank mix, says Aaron Hager, extension weed scientist from the University of Illinois.
There is no herbicide that would consistently control these plants, especially if most of these plants are resistant to glyphosate, whether they be the water hemp or the mare's tail. If we've got plants that exceed 12 inches, there's not a lot that we can add to glyphosate that's really going to improve the performance on these large plants.
Nothing on the shelf, save a weed hook, is going to kill glyphosate-resistant water hemp or mare's tail after it exceeds 12 inches in height. Now, the fact is, no herbicide will even slow them down or stunt them enough to lessen the impact of the weed's presence on yield.
Probably not. We've got to remember that some of these products that would potentially slow up or potentially stunt either of these plants, we've had a lot of questions about, should we add some 2,4-DB with the glyphosate? Our work down through the years has indicated and suggested to us that these product or that particular product at the rates that we use in soybean as a tank mix partner is not consistent on these species. As a matter of fact, this late in the calendar now, we're now in the month of July, we really have to be aware that we can also cause a fair amount of damage to the soybean. And if we damage soybean at this stage, we're probably reducing or we're actually lengthening the time before this canopy can close. We need the canopy to close as fast as we can between these rows to give us some shade, give us some suppression of some of the later emerging weed flushes.
Hope now only lays with the closure of the canopy, shading out other weed species. The water hemp of the mare's tail, most likely resistant to glyphosate after years of exposure, will be left to compete unless removed mechanically by hand or machine. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is the closing market report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Let's check the agricultural energy segment. On the phone line with us from Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois, is Stephen Platt. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start with your little tour up north, because I haven't made my way across the northern part of the state, but you've been through DeKalb at least recently.
Yeah, at least the corn looked great. The beans still a little bit shy, but I thought the corn actually was doing really well, although I'm not an expert on it.
Well, let's turn to something that you are familiar with, and I know you deal with futures and commodities, and we may talk about that, but let's deal with the agricultural energies and crude oil to begin with as just something to hang your hat on. And this moving to $100 and above is a pretty sharp increase.
I don't know if I can hang my hat on that, but because I've been calling for this market to break, actually, here over the past few months. But I do think the reasons for the rally are kind of have been simplified. Many people think it's the Egyptian situation and unrest, maybe the stock market playing a role, but there has been a lot of foreshadowing, and we've talked about this in some of the previous months, about these spreads in terms of the dramatic movement in Brent to TI, losing ground, and also even the spreads of WTI, nearby TI, going to a big premium against December WTI. Which is our benchmark crude. There's now even talk that WTI is coming back in terms of being the benchmark crude, in terms of the demand on the Gulf for it by refiners. So there's a lot of different kind of avenues involved here that probably are being overlooked in terms of reasons for the rally. I think what we've seen is some supplies not getting to Cushing, which is the main delivery point on WTI. We've seen some better demand out of the refiners as you open up some pipelines moving from Cushing here. That's all helped, and those infrastructure changes can have a pretty big impact on the price levels for WTI.
Just to be sure, WTI stands for West Texas Intermediary. I can't quite
Intermediate. Intermediate. West Texas Intermediate. And there's, you know, it's a lighter crude oil that's basically used more for gasoline, and it represents some of the lighter crude streams. And, you know, the different types of crude streams by refiners are certainly a factor on how much gasoline, how much distillate, how much diesel, different things they'll be producing out of their refinery operations.
Do you keep an eye on the ethanol production across the United States?
Yes, we have. And I know the margins have been under pressure here lately, and some of that has been more a function of how tight corn supplies are. I'm sure that will be somewhat resolved as we move into new crop supplies.
Anything else that we need to talk about on the agricultural energies before
well,
I let you go?
I do think people probably, you know, if you're a little bit nervous about, certainly there's always risk in terms of your harvest operations, in terms of using distillate contract or diesel contract, which is now an ultra low sulfur contract on the New York Merc as possibly a diesel hedge.
All right. Thank you so much.
Sure.
That is Stephen Platt. He's with Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. We do read you the ultra-low sulfur diesel each and every day in our Outlook section. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather.
It's National Sugar Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1766, Jacob Perkins was born. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression. in 1792, S.L. Mitchell was named as the first professor of agriculture at Columbia College in New York City. In 1808, Samuel Parker patented the leather splitting machine. In 1815, the first natural gas well in the U.S. was discovered by accident near Charleston, West Virginia, while digging salt brine wells. In 1869, Henry Tibby invented the corncob pipe. By the way, the pipe was made from a special type of white kernel corn that was used to make taco and tortilla flour. In 1894, Percy LeBaron Spencer was born. Spencer developed the microwave oven in 1946 after he noticed that some chocolate in his pocket had melted. Spencer deduced the candy melted not due to body heat, but rather exposure to radiation from a magnetron tube. And in 1996, Douglas Chapman died. A Canadian-born U.S. mathematical statistician, Chapman did extensive research on fish farming, and he developed quantitative methods aiding in the management of fisheries. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming is here to look at the forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start right here in the Corn Belt. It's been hot the last couple of days. I suppose that's made the corn really pop out of the ground. And we've had some rainfall muster its way across the Midwest, too.
Yeah, and what we're going to see is a continuation of what we've had, occasional chances of some rain, and temperatures that are going to have moments of being warm like they've been. More often than not over the next week, though, we're still looking at temperatures in many areas that are going to be holding close to average. There might even be slightly below normal average temperatures in some areas. The core of the hottest temperatures will be out further west, across the Dakotas, across Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma. Those are the areas that are likely going to be able to rack up a bit more in the way of growing degree days as compared to the Corn Belt.
I made note as I read the forecast earlier in this half hour that the winds turned from the southwest out of the north, northwest, I think, and that portends those cooler temperatures. It should feel actually pretty good right here at home, I would think.
Well, it will be. I mean, it'll be comfortable. In fact, in terms of growing conditions, temperatures that are going to be not far from average and occasional periods of rain chances bodes well. Question is that we still are playing catch-up with our heat unit and growing degree day accumulation in many areas. And while this weather will be favorable for growing, we're not going to be gaining a lot of ground from that regard.
The wheat crop is wrapping up, but as you look around the United States, are there growing areas you have concerns about at this time at all?
Well, yeah, we're still the southern plains and those southern wheat areas still the biggest concern. Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, those areas, while the prospects for rain for those folks look a lot better as we get into late next week and beyond, at least in the short term, it's still going to be a bit of a struggle.
In the southern hemisphere, Australia in particular, they were suffering some dry weather as they tried to put a crop in the ground for the coming year. Have they had any relief?
A little, and only in the southern areas, but the prospects for good precipitation in Australia, not really good. The eastern, southern growing areas do have some precipitation chances. The rest of the country, though, pretty dry.
Let's go northward from there to the growing regions in China, India, Ukraine, parts of Europe.
Well, let's go with Europe first. And as we look there, it looks a little drier. In fact, while many areas of Europe won't be excessively hot, the trend forecast-wise is for the Ukraine to have the best chances of rain. Western and Central Europe is going to be a little bit on the dry side. Going into China, they're looking at a weather pattern not unlike what we're going to see here in the Midwest.
They're going to be a little bit drier, but there are some chances for rain, and temperatures are going to be holding close to normal.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Visit us online at willag.org if you get the chance. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Bates Commodities, AgriGold, The Andersons, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Services. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL Agricultural Programs.